Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So we all have our ideas about what song captures the magic of love best. Maybe it's this. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. We love you, yeah, yeah. Or maybe it's this. At last. My love has come along. Thank you, Etta James. Or this. Beyonce Crazy in Love, but our next guests probably think it's more like this. She blinded me with science. She blinded me with science. Larry Young, a neuroscientist at Emory University, and Brian Alexander, a longtime journalist, wrote the new book, The Chemistry Between Us, Love, Sex, and the Science of Attraction. If you want to continue thinking, folks, that love is a mysterious thing, unknowable in its fickle and entrancing ways, you may want to turn the radio off for the next 15 minutes. Larry, Brian, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
All right.
Great to be here. Thank you, Brian.
Might as well ask the big question right at the top. Is love, Larry, just a chemical reaction?
It's not just a chemical reaction, but certainly chemicals are involved. And over the last few years, figured out a number of the chemical pathways that are involved in creating this complex emotion. When you get right down to it, I think it really is a series of chemical reaction, but it's so complex that it becomes much more than that in our experience.
You want to give us a little of the biochemistry of it?
Sure. We know that when we're with our partners and we're experiencing that loving feeling, there's dopamine being released. That's part of the gives us that feeling of exhilaration. We know that oxytocin is a molecule that's produced in the brain that creates love between mothers and offspring, but also between partners. Opiates are involved, and all of these things act together, acting in specific parts of our brain to create these complex emotions that we call love.
So, Brian, when the Righteous Brothers sang, "You've lost that love and feeling," it could have been, "You've lost that dopamine." Do we still act... I mean, what does this do to the idea of crazy in love or head over heels? Do we still act less rationally when we're in love?
Well, that's actually one of the questions that we pose in the book is knowing all this stuff about love, is it really sort of make love a little bit like the idea of quantum physics, where if you can look at it, it sort of disturbs it and changes it. We argue in the book that it doesn't really change the way we're going to feel about love, because we tell ourselves stories about love, how we fell in love, and even if we know a lot about it, we're still going to tell ourselves that story, and we're still going to feel that love is beautiful and mysterious.
Listeners, any questions on the neuroscience of love? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And in the book, Larry, you raised the question of gender. And there are significant differences between the male brain and the female brain. Does that mean we fall in love in different ways?
Do the males and females
Correct.
Fall in love? So based on our work on prairie voles, these little monogamous rodents that we study, it seems that there may be some differences. In these little rodents, the oxytocin seems to play an important role in the female bonding to the male, and that produces a very nurturing kind of bond, very much like a maternal bond. Whereas for the males, it's another molecule called vasopressin, which normally is involved in territorial kinds of behaviors. And so we think that maybe the male bond to the female is more of an extension of a territorial behaviors. And if we think that this may extend to humans, then there may be also some differences between male and female love as well.
So, Brian, do you conclude that people can use this information or just understand why they're in love with each other or frustrated with each other better?
Well, both. I mean, I think that if... readers of the book will find, as we dissect all the steps that lead to love and some of the implications of a longer-term love, things like infidelity and so on, that you can use them. You got to read between the lines a little bit and realize, hey, I need to maybe restart my passion or restart my love somehow. I also think it will relieve a lot of people's anxieties. I used to write an advice column for NBC.com, and I got a lot of letters from people saying, you know, we haven't been passionate in, you know, X number of weeks or months. You know, should I worry? The book lays out that this is actually a perfectly natural situation, that we all lose that passion, which sounds dark, but in effect, we also will still want to be with that bonded person, that person that we're with.
So what is the biochemistry then, Larry, of, in effect, falling out of love?
Well, I wouldn't say that we fall out of love necessarily, but over the course of time, we have less dopamine release, but we also have an increase in a molecule called CRF, which actually creates an aversive, unpleasant feeling when we're away from our partner. And so we think that that's a molecule that sort of helps us maintain these bonds after all that exhilaration and excitement is gone. That negative feeling when we're away drives us back together.
So that's really the biochemistry of what Brian was just describing.
Exactly.
We may not be as passionate as we once were, but we still want to be with the person.
Exactly.
And then where does infidelity come in biochemically?
Well, infidelity is it's actually a among animals, it's a very natural process, even among very monogamous species. They all do it. So we think that it's something that's programmed in our genome for us to engage in this behavior. And there are a couple of genes that have been found in humans as well as in animals that seem to predict how often the individuals will have these extramarital affairs. So we don't know exactly the precise details, the chemistry of infidelity, but we know genes that tend to push us in that direction or not.
My guests are Larry Young and Brian Alexander, authors of The Chemistry Between Us, Love, Sex, and the Science of Attraction. It's about the neuroscience of love. And Sean in Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hi, Sean.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great stuff, and I've read a lot about the neuroscience of love and attraction. And yet, what I still don't understand and mystifies me is falling in love is one thing, and that makes a lot of sense, but what happens when one falls out of love? And I mean, loses and permanently loses the desire for intimacy and love for somebody that not long ago they were very much in love with.
Brian, I'm going to let you take this as the advice columnist in the room.
Okay. Well, love... We describe love, and Larry's hypothesis is that love is actually an addiction, that very similar to drug addiction. And just as a drug addict really sort of falls out of love with his drug, but yet still continues to use the drug, there's a similar reaction in people. So being in love is like putting a gun to your head. Now, we still want to be with this person, even though we don't feel that level of passion anymore. So when we say fall out of love, that's really what people are usually talking about. It's not that they are going to feel comfortable or happy when they've left somebody. There's still going to be a big disturbance. They may conclude rationally that they shouldn't be with this person anymore, that the feelings have changed or the person has changed. And yet, even somebody who initiates a divorce, for example, they are miserable. And men, believe it or not, suffer from these breakups and divorces more than women do. The health outcomes for divorced men are actually much worse than for divorced women.
For neuroscientific reasons that you can identify?
Actually, yes. The women have much better, typically now, these are all sort of typical things, mm-hmm. have a much better sort of social network, and they reach out for aid more than men do in these sorts of cases. Men tend to suffer more alone. As a result, they experience more stress. The CRF that Larry was just discussing is more active in the men. They get more anxious because it's not moderated by social interaction with other people. And that creates, for example, high blood pressure and heart disease.
Catherine on Long Island. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me. I just have a question about people that are in casual relationships, not a long-term thing, maybe a one-night stand. Do they still create the dopamine and the oxytocin when they're having sex with that person for maybe only one time?
Larry?
Yes, they do. And I'm not exactly sure why the casual sex between those people doesn't lead to long-term relationships. I think it probably has to do with sort of the context of the situation.
People who are not neuroscientists might have a better handle on that.
Yes.
And they list about 1,000 reasons off the top of their heads. But but then what you're really talking about is the neuroscience of physical attraction as opposed to emotional attraction, if the same chemical gets released during casual sex?
Right. So this may be more involved in lust, for example, the sort of attraction, and doesn't lead to that bond for some reason.
Jamie in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, this is a totally fascinating topic. I'm really enjoying it. But my comment really, Brian, pertains to the first question that you asked. You asked the guest, and I think she was sort of tongue-in-cheek, is love just chemistry or is love just chemicals? And I think it's important. I think that question, if it was asked in earnest, is a symptom of, you know, this constant inadequate debate about, you know, that science and religion or science and philosophy being at odds with each other. And the reality is, even if these two brilliant guys came up with a comprehensive mechanical explanation for why people fall in love, the question of why do these chemicals exist, why do these neurotransmitters exist, indeed, why does anything exist at all, that is a philosophical / religious question and not a scientific question. And I thank you guys for the program. It's a great show.
Thank you very much. Well, maybe God invented existentialism.
That's right.
Well, as a matter of fact, in the book, we lay out how ancient some of these neurochemicals and these circuits actually are, hundreds of millions of years old. It's been true throughout evolution. So there's clearly very important role, survival role, for this sort of circuitry that we're talking about.
So I'm sure there are a lot of people listening right now thinking to themselves, this doesn't describe me at all. Like when you said that in general, the different chemicals in a man's and a woman's brain means that a woman approaches her love relationship maternally and a man approaches it territorially. I'm sure people were hearing that and go, oh, haven't we got past that yet? And that doesn't sound like me in the 21st century. So does the research account for a spectrum of behavior and cultural change?
Oh, absolutely. So when we say that there are tendencies for men to experience an emotion in one way and women another, we really are talking about a tendency of group averages here. And certainly there is a lot of variation among people. So these are concepts that we've come up with based on lots of research in animal models, and we really think that there is a lot of evidence that similar things are going on in humans.
I love the name of your center at Emory University, by the way, the Center for Translational Social Neuroscience.
Yes.
Which means, in 10 seconds?
Okay, it means that by understanding the biology of relationships and love, we hope to be able to translate that into new treatments for disorders like autism, where we can help people create relationships where they have problems.
Larry Young, neuroscientist at Emory University, and Brian Alexander, a longtime journalist and advice columnist, wrote the new book, The Chemistry Between Us, Love, Sex, and the Science of Attraction. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.